Well, this is Focus 580. It's our morning talk show. Glad that you can be with us for the second hour of the program. This summer, we have been doing kind of an informal series looking at energy, particularly looking at renewable sources of energy. And we have talked about a number of them so far. We have talked about wind and solar. And on the program this morning, in this hour, we will be talking about geothermal energy. And geothermal, as the name would suggest, is a combination of the words for the earth and for heat. And what it is, it's taking advantage of the fact that below the surface of the earth, sometimes not too far below, sometimes very far below, there are heat sources that you can tap into that can be used in a variety of ways. And we'll be talking a little bit about that in this hour with our guest, Dr. John Lund. He is director of the GeoHeat Center at the Oregon Institute of Technology, and he has worked in the direct utilization of geothermal energy for more than 30 years. Has PhD from University of Colorado in civil engineering. He's a registered professional engineer in Oregon and California. He's an emeritus professor of civil engineering at the Oregon Institute of Technology, where he taught for 32 years, and has been dealing with this area in quite a long time. As we talk this morning with Dr. Lund, questions are welcome. The only thing, I always say this, the only thing that we ask of people who call is people just try to be brief so that we can get in as many people as possible and keep the program moving. But, of course, questions are welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana where we are located, the number to call is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that means that if it would be a long-distance call for you, you're listening in and around Illinois and Indiana, or if you just might happen to be listening on the internet, as long as you're in the United States, you can use the toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Dr. Lund, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
Good, good.
Thanks for talking with us.
Well, I appreciate being asked to participate in your program on renewable energy.
Well, I guess to start out with, to make sure that people know just the very basic idea, and then we'll talk about this, the different ways in which people have looked at taking advantage of heat from the earth. That's essentially what it is we're talking about. And I guess the basic idea is, and this will not be surprising to people, is that indeed there's heat below the surface of the earth. And some people know, for example, the idea of the heat pump that takes advantage of the fact that below the surface, and you don't have to go very far, the earth maintains a constant temperature, relatively constant temperature. And that's the kind of thing that you can use. And we'll talk about how that works. But also there are cases where people have done in various ways, tapped into the heat that's at much deeper levels. Maybe this is a more involved technology, but you can actually take advantage of that and use that to generate electricity. And there are plants that do that, mostly, I guess, in the western United States.
That's correct. Yeah, there are four states that presently generate electricity from geothermal. That's California, Utah, Hawaii, and I'm drawing a blank here, Nevada.
Yeah.
Yes, those are California, of course, has the biggest installation and has the one the longest. They've been generating electricity since about 1960, and they supply about 6% of the electrical energy to the state from two fields, that one at the geysers in Northern California and the second one in Imperial Valley. Mm.
So that's sort of small, but not insignificant.
That's correct, yes.
Around the world, how much geothermal generation is there?
Well, there's almost 9,000 megawatts in about 24 countries at the present time. And in some of these countries, it's a fairly significant portion of their energy, such as the Philippines, El Salvador, so forth.
And I suppose here, again, and maybe when we get into this a little bit more, we can explain why that is. But it is one of those things that's sort of site-specific. A heat pump, you could use almost anywhere. That's sort of one sort of issue. But if you're talking about tapping into heat at deeper levels and using that to generate electricity, that or if you're going to use direct use, and we could talk about that too, you kind of have to have your plant where the heat is. You can't just put it anywhere.
That's correct, yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing. Now, as drilling becomes cheaper and you can drill deeper, then probably you can expand that a little bit. But you're right. It's in the western states. It's in the volcanic belts. Of course, that's associated with the earthquake belts as well. So, as you mentioned, you don't find power generation from geothermal in the Midwest or in the eastern states.
There is a long history of what is called direct use of geothermal hot water. People have been using this for a long, long time, building spas over hot springs and so forth. And I guess there are some modern uses that are similar, I suppose. In industrial uses, perhaps this on a relatively small scale, but using geothermal hot water.
Yes, that's true. Well, we can trace it back as much as 10,000 years because we know that the Native Americans used the hot springs mainly as ceremonial sites, as areas of refuge and so forth. But, yeah, the spas were developed, especially in the U.S., trying to emulate the ones in Europe. And so they're all over the country. Of course, the famous one is Warm Springs, Georgia, where President Franklin Roosevelt, you know, tried to cure himself of polio. Hot Springs, Arkansas, being one of our national parks. But you mentioned some of the unique uses. In Nevada, for example, there's two onion dehydration plants that dry onions and garlic that are trucked all the way from Southern California to Southern Oregon out into the middle of the Nevada desert because the energy is cheap. Another industrial use that's been popular in Nevada is gold and silver heap leaching, where they can extract additional gold and silver from piles of, abandoned ore, you might say, because the geothermal extends the season, and they can extract about 17% more gold and silver than under normal circumstances.
I understand, too, that actually a system to take this water and pipe it into buildings was actually set up, I think this is Boise, in the 1890s, and it's still operating.
Yes, that's the Boise Heating District, yeah, 1892. They heated as many as 400 houses. Right now, there are actually 19 cities or communities, I guess, that have what we call district heating systems. Four of these are in Boise. And I was on vacation in Colorado and visited one of these in Pagosa Springs, a small town in southern Colorado. We actually have two of them here in Klamath Falls, where I live, one in the downtown area and our campus since 1960. And the campus was moved here because of the geothermal. We receive our entire heat from geothermal with no backup source of energy.
So how exactly does that work?
Well, we have, I'll use the campus example. We have three wells, two of them about 1,800 feet deep, one about 1,200 feet. We pump 192 degree Fahrenheit water, average somewhere around 300 to 400 gallons a minute. That is piped into each building. And then to separate the geothermal water, which has a few chemicals in it, we use plate heat exchangers and then isolate the geothermal from the building heating system. And then that water is circulated, the secondary water is circulated through each building, through radiators, through forced air systems, and then eventually goes into a large storage tank and into an injection well.
Hmm. So essentially it is a slightly more complicated version of what some people like me grew up with, where you lived in a house that had hot water radiators and you had a furnace that heated the water, circulated through the radiators, and the heat radiated off. Here you're just taking advantage of the fact that the heat is available there. The hot water there is available and it's already hot.
Yes. Well, I might use another example. My own house. I have a 400-foot deep well, 190 degrees, and I have a closed loop of pipe in that well that I circulate city water through, bring it up, run it through what used to be an old gas furnace, but now just run it through the forced air system. So I heat my house, I heat my domestic hot water, and I even have a hot tub in the backyard that I heat that way.
Wow.
At about $10 a month.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. And there again, that's I guess we've talked about the fact that for something like to be able to have a system like that, obviously you've got to have the heat source, or you've got to have the source of the hot water. So, for example, at my house over in Urbana, we're not going to have a system like that, but how it sounds as if there is the potential for a variety of places to use that kind of heat source for a residential use.
Yes, and of course what you've mentioned several times is geothermal heat pumps or ground source heat pumps that can be used anywhere in the world. In fact, they're probably is being used in 30 countries, and the U.S. is the leader in these ground source heat pumps. We have somewhere over 600,000 units of these installed, mostly in the Midwest and the East Coast. And they use, as you pointed out, natural ground temperature. They can use either horizontal loops buried maybe 10 feet in the ground, or vertical loops down 150 to 200 feet, or can use groundwater. And the nice thing about the heat pumps, they provide both heating and cooling. So in your part of the country, cooling can become just as important as heating. And now there's a little bit of electricity input into it, but it's still far more economical than, say, using conventional fuels.
Right, and it takes advantage of the fact that in the winter time, the ground temperature is warmer than the air temperature. In the summertime, it's cooler than the air temperature. And so you're taking advantage of the fact that there's that source of either hotter air or cooler air that you can then use to either contribute to heating your building or contribute to cooling it.
Yes, yeah, you're correct on that.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580, maybe I will just reintroduce very quickly, is Dr. John Lund. He is director of the GeoHeat Center at the Oregon Institute of Technology at Klamath Falls, Oregon, and has been working in this area, direct utilization of geothermal energy, for over 30 years. He is an emeritus professor of civil engineering there at OIT, and he taught there for 32 years and has been doing research and writing and work in this area for a long time. We're talking about geothermal energy. And questions are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. Well, we talked a little bit about the fact that there was this long history of direct use. People think about hot springs and the way people have taken advantage of essentially free sources of hot water over a long period of time. We talked here a little bit about the idea of the heat pump, which is something people around here should at least be familiar with the concept of, and you could have a heat pump in central Illinois, no problem. And then also the fact that on a residential level, if you have the right resources, you could have a system, well, like you've described at your house, where you could take advantage of the source of heat, subterranean source of heat. Let's go on and talk a little bit about, on a larger scale, about electricity production, because there is the possibility, and there are plants that do this, that can take advantage of the fact that there is hot water beneath the surface, or there are heat sources beneath the surface that you could take advantage of and use those in varieties of ways. And I know there are different kind of designs for doing this, but what's sort of the basic concept here for using this subterranean heat for making electricity?
Well, the one that's most interested by developers are high temperature, usually above 300 degrees Fahrenheit, where they can bring up hot water under pressure or even steam, flash the hot water and run it through a turbine that then turns a generator. And then, of course, that then is injected back in the ground. That's the more typical one, using steam to run a turbine, just like a conventional fossil fuel plant. But more recently, we have what we call organic Rankine cycle or binary power plants. And what this does is use a secondary low boiling point hydrocarbon working fluid. So the geothermal comes up. It runs through a heat exchanger, boils this low-temperature secondary fluid, and that then, the vapor from that runs the turbine. And these have been installed in areas down where they've used hot water down to 200 degrees Fahrenheit. So, and the temperature that these will work at is slowly being lowered. What really kills you, of course, is the efficiency, the parasitic load from pumps and that sort of thing. But I think you'll see 180-degree temperatures being used economically to generate power. And that then, of course, expands the area where geothermal, where you can generate electricity. We'll move it further east in the United States. For example, in Germany, they're doing several small communities are generating electricity through low-temperature resources, and then using the wastewater in a cascaded mode, for district heating, for swimming pools, for greenhouses. And so they're maximizing the energy use of that resource and therefore making it more economical to use it.
What's the cost for per kilowatt hour, and how does that compare with other ways of generating electricity?
Well, right now, geothermal in the West runs somewhere between around 5 cents to 7 cents a kilowatt hour, which, of course, is a little higher than fossil fuel and so forth. But wind has been able to compete because they've had what we call a production tax credit. Hopefully, with the new energy bill, geothermal will also get that. And that amounts to, 1.8 cents a kilowatt hour. So you'll see geothermal then go down to the 3 to 5 cents, which is then competitive with other energy sources.
We have a couple of callers here. Let's bring them into the conversation. And first is caller on line number 1 in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
I'm interested in installing a ground source heat pump, and I was wondering, I have to... three questions. The first one is, how much is the cost of surveying the field? In other words, how many holes you have to dig to be able to assure you, or to be able to design the installation? Second, the cost of the installation, how much does it cost to dig all the holes that you need and all the pumps and things like that? And the third question is, if you can guide me towards a good design guidebook for geothermal heat pump, and they might hang up and listen to you on the radio.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, well, good questions, good questions. First of all, a typical residence, let's pick a house about 2,000 square foot, that would take about 3, maybe 4 tons of what we call cooling load. Unfortunately, in the U.S., we use the word tons of cooling, because that's an old term referring to what the cooling produced by 1 ton of ice. And the Europeans just shake their heads when we talk about it. But that's about 12,000 BTUs an hour. So 3 or 4 tons would be typical for a residence. That would require, if you're putting in a vertical loops, that would require 3 holes about 150 foot deep. In other words, 1 hole per ton, so 3 to 4 holes. If you're putting in horizontal loops, it would take about 30% more pipe. So where you're talking, 150, 450, it might take 600 feet of pipe in horizontal trenches, but you could put a double loop in a trench. As far as groundwater, about 3 gallons per minute per ton. So you're talking probably 9 to 12 gallons a minute of water that you would need for a typical home. Cost, somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000 to $3,000 per ton of installed. That would include the holes in the ground plus the unit itself. The heat pump itself probably runs around $3,000. Drilling the holes, if you put vertical in, probably $5 to $10 a foot, depending on the availability of local drillers. As far as design guides and so forth, if I can do a little commercial here, we are funded by the U.S. Department of Energy to provide free technical assistance. So you can contact us either through the internet or through the phone, and we can help you with your design. There are a number of design guides. We have several of those on our website, which is just geoheat.oit.edu. More complicated designs for commercial buildings, there are certain ASHRAE, American Society of Heating and Refrigeration Engineers design guides, but we can also give you that title as well.
Okay, very good. Let's go on. We have somebody else here. This is also someone listening in Champaign. I hope, by the way, that we answered the caller's question, and if he wants to call back and ask some more questions, that's fine. Anybody else wants to call, you're certainly welcome to do that. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Now, on to another caller here, line number 2 in Champaign. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, I'm a consulting engineer here in Champaign, and we have actually designed a couple of ground source heat pump systems. And I want to ask you about sources of information on two issues that we've run into. The first is drilling technology. Kind of coming up short there, and I've even talked to the oil industry about what drilling technologies they use, because the deeper we go, the fewer holes we need. Do you have any sources there?
Yeah, I can refer you to an organization called the International Ground Source Heat Pump Association, which is located...
Aware of them, yeah.
Are you familiar with them at Oklahoma State?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Dr. Jeff Spittler?
Yes. Yeah. And they would be a source. Or I can have you call us, and I have an expert on staff here, a mechanical engineer, Andrew Chason, who can answer a lot of these questions because he's done a lot of work in that area.
Okay. Specifically, looking at going super deep, as not a conventional 150, 300 feet, but super deep. So that would be my question. I'll pursue that channel. The second and last question I have is that you've mentioned a couple times reinjection wells.
Yes.
And looking at the systems we've done, it'd be nice, but I've been, discouraged on using this technology. One of the parties discouraging me was one of the major manufacturers of ground source heat pumps. They weren't secure with it. And as I look at it, just from a basic technical standpoint, to re-inject in the ground, you're going to be pumping against some kind of pressure head. What is that? No one seems to know. And I've heard a lot of horror stories about that, so I'd be interested in more information on that issue also.
Okay, well, on injection, of course, now we're talking about two different systems. One is closed loop.
Yeah,
and that's where you're drilling the vertical holes.
Sure, but I'm talking about an open loop and re-injecting the once-through water back into the aquifer. That is what I've been, while a lot of people say you can do that, I've been advised against that and haven't found any real good information on it.
Yeah, and, well, it depends on the aquifer. Now, if the aquifer is permeable, obviously the water goes in, you know, and it will... flow back into the aquifer without any trouble. Of course, you have to keep it far enough away so that it doesn't influence the production well. But in certain areas, they allow you to dump the water into streams, into lakes, that sort of thing. So you might not have to. Again, it's local groundwater law.
Right. We've had a couple instances where we were, the client said specifically they didn't want to dump anywhere on site. They wanted to look at reinjection. And it just seemed to be methodology that again, I've been coming up short in terms of finding any really good information on it.
Well, you'd almost have to talk to some local groundwater expert in the area who knows the permeability of the various aquifers.
That's actually what we've ended up doing in a couple of instances we've looked at it. But
and they have discouraged you on this?
Well, you know, if we're going to pump it a certain GPM back into the ground, we're going to be pumping against, there's the pipe friction loss. There's also a certain pressure, I would imagine, that we're going to pump against down in the aquifer. What is that?
Well, I mean, that's a function of the permeability of the aquifer and the thickness of it.
Right.
I mean, for example, we inject 300 gallons a minute right back into the ground, and we require no pumps or anything. It just it takes it without any problems. But...
knowing, I guess, just kind of looking at everything subterranean. When, as we've gotten into this over the last couple of years, you can do it where you are. Does that mean we can do it here?
Not necessarily, no. Because we're in volcanic, so we have fracture flow. You're
right.
In sedimentary, so you have intergranular flow. And again, it's just a function of the permeability. But if you can pump it out without too much trouble, I would assume you could then inject without too much trouble.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, I mean, if you're having trouble pumping, you know, 10 gallons a minute, then you're going to have trouble putting that back in the ground as well.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go on here. We have somebody over in McLean County. They're the next caller up on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
This is so timely, I can't believe it. I just talked to a business person about the geothermal. And trying to see if I can get geothermal in my home. You tell me something that you just in your introduction you said, and I didn't quite understand. Why is it that Midwest doesn't have as much geothermal as the West Coast does? You explained that, and I missed out.
Okay, I can answer that. I mean, in the West here, we're in a volcanic region, which is you know, the heat is near the surface.
Right.
More recent activity in the Midwest, you're very old geologically. But in the Midwest, what works there, and I think what David has been talking about as well, is using geothermal or ground source heat pumps,
mm-hmm.
and that works quite well in your area there.
Mm-hmm.
And providing both heating and cooling is the real advantage. See, with my system, I can't do cooling. I only do heating. But fortunately, I don't need, I'm in a dry climate here. But in the Midwest, you get both the heating and the cooling from the heat pump.
Right.
And it's known technology. There should be installers in your area. If not, we can provide names for you if you wish, or you can call the International Ground Source Heat Pump Association at Oklahoma State, and they have a list of installers and drillers and that sort of thing.
Do you happen to have the number for that?
Yes.
Tell me.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Yes, 800-636-4747.
Okay, 636-4747.
Yeah, and it's an 800 number, and that's the International Ground Source Heat Pump Association at Oklahoma State.
Okay.
And they have a list of installers and contractors, so forth, nationwide, and they can probably give you some names.
Now, the one I did talk to, who can come this far as to where I live, compared to another group that couldn't, which actually is closer to Urbana, but couldn't come this far, they were talking about a certain brand of. Is there any reason to go look brand hunting or?
Well, there are a number of brands on the market, and. What you have to do is you have to fit the model to your temperature of the ground.
Okay.
You're using and people at ICSPA or we can help you with that. We'd have to look up, we have books that we can look up these various models and so forth.
Okay.
But there are a number of good ones on the market.
Okay. You were talking about some group and you said you had a website or email address. You gave the website.
Yeah, that's our website.
The geoheat.oit.
Yeah, because there's no www. Just geoheat.oit stands for Oregon Institute of Technology.
Now, do you guys also have a phone number? That
yes,
I can...
we're at 541-885-1750. Yeah.
Okay, 541-885-1750.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I also follow up on something else that another gentleman asked about? You were talking about. One costing 2,000 square feet, and that's approximately what my house is. How much should I expect for a range of cost altogether? Because I know you started to go down a list of, you said the pump would cost so much. And
well, you're probably talking for a 2,000 square foot house, and everything probably anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000.
Okay, $8,000 to $12,000. All right. Yeah. Now, I've heard about this because I have friends of mine who have the geothermal.
Uh-huh.
The cost of, how much will the electricity cost in this? Because I know... You end up needing the electricity to run the fan and the pump and things like that.
Well, you need to run the electricity to run a compressor.
Okay.
And we talk about coefficient of performance, COP.
Okay.
Yeah. And normally heat pumps are operate around 4. So that says for every 1 unit of electricity you put in, you get 4 units of heating or cooling.
Okay. So.
So compared to conventional sources, your electricity cost would be roughly a 20% or a quarter.
Okay, what it was.
Yeah, what it was, yeah.
Okay.
But you do need that slight amount of electricity for the compressor.
Okay. Water issues. Will this create a problem with talking to the city or the town about making sure that there's not going to create a water problem?
Well, it depends on whether you're using an open loop or a closed loop system. With
okay.
Closed loop, you're not, you're using normal, maybe even antifreeze in the line.
Uh-huh.
So you're not even using any water. With,
oh, okay.
with an open loop, you're using well water or lake water or river water.
Uh-huh. Now, basically to the city, right? Is that
yeah.
what you're saying? Okay. Is one more expensive than the other, or is one better than the other?
No, the only reason that you might use well water, a lot of people already have a well on their property that they're using for their domestic water source.
Mm-hmm.
See, so you could then piggyback off of that. But if you don't have a well, it's probably cheaper to put in closed-loop systems.
Yeah, because we don't have a well. We live in a town where we'd have to connect to that. So
yeah.
Anyway, I'm just excited. So I'm really glad you're on. Please keep telling us more about this because I'm really in the learning process. I'm really
okay. Well, we have just the manual on our website.
Okay.
Okay, and it's called our homeowner's guide. I'm looking for the title right here. Yeah, an information survival kit for the prospective geothermal heat pump owner.
Okay.
And if you go into our website, that is right on the first page. You click on that, and you can download that whole manual that was written for the layperson.
Okay. One last question, then I'll let you go, because I'm sure that other people want to speak with you. Can you connect this or work this with solar panels or not, or is that...
Yes, you can. In fact, we have our mechanical engineer on site is actually doing a PhD thesis in that, in connection with using solar and geothermal together. Yes, so you could.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. So that would, instead of then having to connect to power source, external power source, you might be able to use or supplement that with a
Photovoltaics or something like that. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and our mechanical engineer is pretty knowledgeable in that area, can advise on that.
Mm. Well, let me again introduce our guest for people who are listening here. We're talking this morning with Dr. John Lund. He is director of the GeoHeat Center at the Oregon Institute of Technology at Klamath Falls, Oregon. And he's been working in this area, direct utilization of geothermal energy, for a long time, more than 30 years. He is an emeritus professor of civil engineering at OIT, where he taught for 32 years. And if you're interested, if you have internet access and you are interested in doing research on the subject and seeing what's on their website, again, their website is geoheat.oit, and that's for Oregon Institute of Technology.edu. So you can go right there and see what sort of resources and information is available. And of course, if you'd like to call in here and talk with the man himself, with Dr. Lund, you can do that too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We talked about the fact that this this particular use, geothermal heat pumps, that's something that you can do just about any place, or at least a lot of places, and that you could use this for, depending on how it's set up, either heating, residential heating, or both heating and cooling. Residential. I'm not sure that we've talked about this. How many heat pumps are there now out there in operation? Maybe you could have some kind of number just for the United States?
Well, it's a little hard to estimate because you call around the various state energy offices and they don't have a good handle on it. But based on manufactured sales and based on equipment shipped and so forth, we estimate somewhere between 600,000 and a million units. These are like 3-ton units that are installed in the U.S.
Hmm.
And a lot of these are installed in schools. Schools, especially in the Texas area, seem to be going just great guns down there with heat pumps for heating and cooling.
Hmm. It's the kind of thing where I think you're obviously the upfront costs are kind of high, and
you get
your money back. And it may also be the kind of thing that would be easier to do with new construction than on an existing home, although, you know, depending on what your setup is and whether you have the land and so forth, that may not be a particular issue. But I guess maybe that's the hurdle that you have to get over, that what's the initial expense, and then trying to figure out that then over the time you'll be in your home, what your energy costs are going to be, and then how it sort of prices out over a theoretically over a long period of time.
Right, and that's always the big stumbling block because, as you point out, it is high upfront costs compared to, say, putting a gas furnace in or something of that type. But over the long run, especially if you're assuming that gas prices and electricity prices are going to escalate, this will pay for itself. We look sort of at 5 to 7 years in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you can do it in that time, that's probably economical. And hopefully you stay in the house that long to justify it. It does add some value to the house as well, too. So when you put it in, even if you move sooner, you're going to recover, hopefully, some of the capital costs.
We have certainly time for other questions here. We got moving into about our last 15 minutes. If you'd like to call the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us around Illinois, Indiana, if you're listening, and it would be long-distance call. And, of course, if you're listening on the Internet in the United States, you can use the toll-free line, too, 800-222-9455. We have someone here near Kokomo, Indiana, line number 4 right here. Hello.
Thanks for the good program, and I want to say amen to your speaker. We have friends who recently built a home outside of Kokomo using the geothermal system, and their electric rate for a 5-bedroom house like ours is about $12 a month. And, of course, they're all electric. And it, you can put those systems in even if the ground is hard clay at the bottom, like some of the ground in Indiana is, or in their case, they had to go through a gravel bed because they built on the site of an old poultry building with a big, wide driveway. But it works. We, in our home, have a combination, which is a great cost saver to us. We have a heat pump along with an LP gas furnace. And our electric bill, when we put our heat pump in this house, dropped probably 40%. We use it for air as well as heating. So your speaker is super, and I do wish you would give the website one more time. I think it's great.
All right. Well, we certainly will do that.
Thanks.
Another endorsement there of the concept.
Yeah, I love to have people like that call in. That's great.
What about maintenance issues? Because I would gather that if my sort of imagination is if you're talking about a deep well or a trench that's dug in the ground, that if something goes wrong, how do you get to it to try to fix it?
Well, hopefully these systems really have a life of about 50 years because you're using plastic pipe. So you're dealing with corrosion. So unless you're out there digging in your yard and accidentally dig it up, you're not going to have any maintenance problems. And the thing that we haven't done is sort of compare this against what we call air source heat pumps, the ones that derive their heat or cooling from the air. These units sit outside, whereas the geothermal ones, the unit sits inside so it's protected from the weather. And we talked about COP, coefficient of performance. Geothermal heat pumps are usually around 4. Air source ones around 2 or even less. And what trouble is, when you need cooling, that's when the outside air is the hottest. And when you need heating, that's when the outside air is the coldest. So you often need backup resistance heating in many cases. The geothermal one has these advantages, and the maintenance is the minimum. The only problem I could see if you had a well and you had a well pump, the pump might be a problem depending on the chemicals in the groundwater, whether it's highly acid or basic. That might cause some problems.
Okay. Let's talk with a caller. I think we have one someone wants to ask some follow-up from earlier in Champaign, line number 1, right here. Hello.
Hi. Hello. Mm-hmm. I called before.
Sure.
And there was one more thing I wanted to go. Do you know any sources of grants or financing for the initial cost for new construction? Is there any programs in the states where they have some grants for to encourage the installation of these systems?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not familiar with your state. For example, in Oregon, we do have a tax grant. And what I would suggest, you call either your state energy office.
Okay.
And ask them what program, because there is no federal program at this time.
Okay.
But there are many, many, many states have grant programs.
Do you know if there is anything in the new energy bill that is about to pass Congress?
No. I've been trying to keep on top of that, but there's nothing in there as far as incentives or grants or rebates or anything.
Okay.
Some of the electric utilities used to have rebates, and I don't know whether your utilities in your state have rebates.
Okay. Also, last time when I called you, you gave me the cost per foot of well, but I didn't write it down.
It varies depending on how competent the drillers are and whether they're available. But we have found that drilling holes in the ground, these are 4-inch diameter holes for the vertical loops. $5 to $10 a foot.
$5 to $10 a foot. Okay.
Yeah. Now, if you put a horizontal loop in, you can put that in with a backhoe. So any contractor could do that.
Okay. $5 to $10. Okay.
Yeah. $5 to $10 a foot for.
And the last question it was, if I want to survey a property to see how many holes I will need and the length and things like that, how many holes should I do for the survey and the length of it?
Well, we use a rough rule of thumb. For about every 700 square foot, you need 1 ton of cooling or heating load. And so per ton, you need one hole, 150 to 200.
Right, no, I understand that for the installation.
Okay.
But for surveying, to see how many you will you need at the end. Do you is it necessary to do a survey of the geology to see before you design the installation?
Well, you can hardly afford to do that, but generally, if there are contractors in the area, they normally know what works and what sort of.
So usually people don't do that, do a pre-survey. Okay.
There are equipment that will do this, but it's normally not economical on residential sites. Okay. Larger installations, yes, they might actually run a thermal conductivity test.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, well, good
thanks
luck.
Thanks for the call. Bye. Let's continue. We have someone here on a cell phone calling from Muhammad, line number two. Hello.
Hi, Dave. Just calling in, I'm a consulting geologist, and I was trying to get in to answer the consulting engineer's question, and I couldn't, but he didn't leave a name, so I don't know how to reach him offline. But if he's listening, I've done injection problems, not here in Illinois, but in Texas, in concert with the Corps of Engineers, on reinjection of brine water, for example. And his question about, you know, how you calculate all that, those tables or the calculations for those things that take into account the piezometric head or the pressure of the water at depth can be calculated as well as the friction and the power needed to re-inject the water. So I think that a couple of the engineering departments, I think certainly here at the University of Illinois, and especially those in the oil drilling states will have information on how to do that particular calculation.
Good. I'm glad you called in. Yeah, because each area is different, so you almost have to have some local knowledge to.
Right, exactly. And he was talking about deep here in Illinois. Of course, we have a pretty good overburden of glacial materials, mm-hmm. and some of those aquifers are used for municipal water supply, so they might not want someone re-injecting anything.
Yeah.
So that's a consideration as well. But if we went down into bedrock 300-400 feet, there certainly is porosity down there in some of the limestones and so forth, and those calculations could be had. The problem, of course, is that as you start to push water down to depth, after gravity runs out of head to overcome the head that you're building, you have to start, you know, putting electricity to it, and now you're almost costing yourself right out of the market.
Right, yeah. So if you have to, you know, use pumps to force it down, you're in trouble, yes.
Yes, exactly right. So I just thought I'd pass it on. That can be calculated. It can be done. It turns out if you go too deep, it's actually probably very costly. It's not going to be cost-effective in this part of the country for a geothermal heat source.
Who would they contact again in their local area to get?
I think in the local area, I think it's just called the University of Illinois Department of Engineering, Civil Engineering. Those folks are one of the top groups in the nation.
Okay.
In terms of that, they could call there. Certainly, as you get over into Oklahoma and into Texas, there are experts at injection because that's a common way of getting rid of brine water. And also, it's also secondary recovery for the oil industry because as you force this brine that you pump up with the oil, and if you take that and pump it back down into the ground, you're increasing the pressure head on the oil to come up. So it's a kind of a recovery technique as well.
Right. Okay. Great.
And that would apply here to an injection. Also, I would say that I think Illinois would have you'd have to have a permit for an injection well.
Okay, regardless,
it's not really a closed system. If you're pumping out of an aquifer, out of a source of water, and then you're going to, even if you keep that closed, and then you pump it back down into the aquifer, my guess is you're going to have a permit from the EPA or, anyway, you'd have to check it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
All right, well, thanks for the call. Thanks for the information.
Okay.
We appreciate it.
Yeah,
one of the things we've talked here a fair amount of use of geothermal for residential heating and cooling. And just to take us back to talk a little bit more about the potential for geothermal for electricity generating on a larger scale. You talked about the fact that electricity is being generated by geothermal power in California, Utah, Nevada, and Hawaii. And that while it may be a small contribution to the energy demand of those places, it's not insignificant and certainly has potential. And as we have explained, because the geology of different places is different, it's not something that you could do everywhere. We couldn't do it here in Illinois, but certainly in the western parts of the United States, you could, and around the world in other countries, they're doing the same. What sort of potential, I wonder, do you think there is for on a large scale, a significant scale for geothermal electricity generation?
Well, there hasn't been a survey done. The last USGS survey done was about 25 years ago, and they're gearing up to resurvey some of the resources. But the estimates range anywhere from 20 to 40,000 megawatts that could be developed. Of course, that's hinged a lot on economics, but that's the range of estimates, 20 to 40,000 megawatts in the U.S.
And what could be done to help that along? I mean, would this really be? And obviously, I suppose as the prices of energy rise, the alternatives become more competitive. Right now, the kilowatt hour price it's not quite as good as some others. What would have to happen? And I guess this takes us back to the earlier questions about the energy legislation that looks like it's. Something's going to happen. There'll be something for the president to sign. You know, whether or not it does much of anything for this or for other renewables.
Well, there are actually three issues that could help. One I've already talked about, the production tax credit, and that's in the current energy bill, hopefully, and it'll make it through. That's 1.8 cents kilowatt hour. That then makes geothermal competitive with natural gas and other fossil fuels. The second thing is a lot of states are passing what we call renewable portfolio standards, where they're requiring that, say, 10 to 15 to even 20% of the energy generated in the state has to come from renewables. And that is gaining momentum throughout the country. And finally, in the energy bill and the revision of the Geothermal Steam Act, the royalties that companies have to pay using geothermal on public lands has been a real stumbling block to development. In the new energy bill, specifically in the Geothermal Steam Act, they're reducing the royalties and making it a little simpler to calculate how much you'd have to pay for using energy from public lands. And that makes sense. I mean, you're trying to encourage the domestic development of energy rather than, say, importing gas or oil and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think these three things, which hopefully will be part or related to the current energy bill, if all three of those come through, well, the renewable portfolio standards are state-level issues. But I think those three things will really promote and encourage the development of geothermal.
Yeah. It's certainly early on in the Bush administration took a lot of criticism for its energy policy for, in some people's minds, too much reliance on traditional fossil fuels and not enough consideration of conservation and of renewables. Do you think that given the fact that a lot of people have said, hey, this is something we really need to be developing and paying more attention to, are we doing that?
Well, no. Interesting enough, the president at his home in Texas has a geothermal heat pump in his house. And he's proud of it. So I would think he would promote renewables. But unfortunately, through the Department of Energy and the Office of OMB are looking at doing away with the geothermal division at DOE. They say it's proven technology and we don't need it anymore. So I'm a little worried about it because in my mind, so is oil and natural gas proven technology. And I don't see their funding being done away with, you know, for R&D. Mm-hmm. No, I think we need to support geothermal. We need the wind, solar, yes, because they're all domestic resources, and we don't have to import them. I mean, they're here, so I think that's where our emphasis has to be.
Well, there we'll have to leave it again. If you're interested in researching this subject, you can look for the website that we've been talking about. This is at the GeoHeat Center at the Oregon Institute of Technology in Klamath Falls. It's geoheat.oit.edu. Our guest, Dr. John Lund, is director of the GeoHeat Center at OIT. Dr. Lund, thanks very much.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.